In those days, claiming to be the Son of God was blasphemy, because it meant that you knew everything God knew and you had all the rights and the privileges that God would have. Now, while he was doing signs and miracles and he was a great teacher, it's really hard to wrap your mind around the fact that a man says he's the Son of God. It was a dark night. By this time, the markets were closed. All the vendors had gone home and they had put everything up for the night. Most of the doors were closed. Very few of them were open. But as I walked down the streets, I could see the lights from the lamps in the windows. It's kind of eerie to be out at that time of night when no one else is there. Most people that go out at that time of night are up to no good, or they're like me and they're trying to keep something secret. The heat of the day was coming up from the... but there was a nice breeze that kept it from being too hot. As I walked along, I thought someone must be following me because I could hear something behind me, and I stopped and I hid there in the shadows. And as I hid there in the shadows, I realized it was just a stray dog looking for some food. And then I got to the house. You see, my name is Nicodemus, and you probably know me as... well, thanks to John, you know me as the guy that came to Jesus at night. But you see, I had a lot to lose. I wanted to see this man, Jesus. But you got to understand my dilemma. You see, I grew up as a Pharisee. And the Pharisees were the largest sect of Jews in the area. And we had tried so hard to make sure that everybody knew that we were set apart. We were a part of God's people. We even dressed differently. And I had made a name for myself. I had studied the law when I was a child, and it was impressed on me not to just study it, but to know it forwards and backwards. I knew every jot and tittle in the law. I knew it so well that they asked me to become a part of the ruling council called the Sadducees, or to be called a part of the Sanhedrin. The Sanhedrin was a board that ruled over the Jews, and we kind of made sure everybody was following the law. It was kind of like Moses' 70 men who discussed the words of the law and made decisions. You know, I was really concerned about not just knowing the law, but making sure my life pleased God. But some of my fellow rulers, sometimes they were more concerned about hanging on to their power than they were to making sure they were doing what's right. But I knew I had to see this man, Jesus. You know, it's kind of like when somebody tells you what a bagel is like. You can't really experience it until you get one for yourself. And I wanted to see what this Jesus was all about. So I came to him at night, and I risk a lot by doing that. The first time I heard of him, I heard about the miraculous signs that he was doing and the things that he was teaching. It seemed to be extraordinary, and I heard about this miracle. It was from a friend of a friend that he had turned water into wine at a wedding. I was curious about him, but it was the time that I first saw him. You see, I went up to the temple to pray, and when I went up to the temple to pray, I was going through the court of the Gentiles, and there was a commotion going on. There was always a commotion going on in the court of the Gentiles at this time of the year, which was Passover. You see, the money changers were in there. They were in there with their animals, and there was a lot of commotion because the animals were in there, and people had to exchange their money for the shekel, which was the Jewish coin for the temple. And there were people arguing over the exchange rate. There were people arguing over the animals. And if you were a Gentile, you were kind of left in the midst of that. You see, being a Gentile in those days meant that you couldn't go into certain parts of the temple. You had to stay in the court of the Gentile, and that is where you worshiped. As a matter of fact, there was a sign there that said if you were a Gentile and you went past this point, you were subject to death. So that's the only place they could worship. And while I realized that it was a problem with all the noise and the commotion going on, it only happened a few times during the year. But this day I saw him for the first time. He had made a whip of cords and he was driving people out. And he was saying to them that, "You're making my Father's house a marketplace." And it kind of struck me that he called it my Father's house, because in those days, if you were the father, the son had the same rights and privileges as the father. So it struck me as weird, but then I remember the psalm that we sung the week before, "The zeal for my house will consume me." And I was interested, to say the least. But what really struck me as strange is when he was talking to them when they were questioning the rulers of the temple, and he said this, "If you destroy this temple, I will rebuild it in 3 days." It took 46 years for them to build that temple, and he's saying that it's going to be rebuilt in 3 days. I knew he had to be talking about something else other than the physical temple, but what was he talking about? Well, it was an interesting time, to say the least. But a thought came over me that we need to know more about him. After watching him for some time, I decided to pay him a visit, and I went to his disciples' house. A man by the name of John, he wrote your book, John. And as I decided to go there, I decided I was going to take the risk because I had to find out who this man really was. And I walked into the room, and then when I walked through into the room, I realized I had walked into a place where he was teaching. I don't know if it's ever happened to you, but it happened to me that night when I walked in the room. As I opened the door and I kind of closed the door behind me, I realized everybody in the room was looking at me, including this man, Jesus. And as he looked at me, I felt as though he knew me. He knew what pain I was dealing with, and he knew what joy I had in my life. And as everybody's looking at me, I had to say something, or they were just going to stare at me all night. And I said, "Rabbi, we know you are a teacher from God because no one can do the miraculous signs you have done unless they were sent from God." And just as those words left my mouth, I realized I was making a confession. And Jesus looked at me, and he knew why I was there, and with one sentence, he answered my question. He says, "I tell you the truth, no one can enter into the kingdom of God unless he is born again." What does that mean? And so, in the tension of the room, I thought, I've got to say something here, because while there were other people in the room, the conversation was between Jesus and I and no one else. So I had to say something. So I looked at him and I said, well, what do you mean? Is a man supposed to enter into his mother's womb for a second time? The sarcasm was lost on everybody. Nobody even smiled. And then Jesus' words kind of explain things a little bit more when he says, I tell you the truth, no one can enter into the kingdom of heaven unless he is born of the water and the Spirit. Flesh gives birth to flesh, but the Spirit gives birth to spirit. You should not be surprised at my saying, you must be born again. I knew of John, the teacher of the wilderness, and that he was baptizing people. I knew that he was baptizing people with water. That was common knowledge. And John had even said that the one that comes after me is greater than me because he's going to baptize you of the Spirit. So I knew Jesus must mean that I need to be baptized. But what does he mean by being born of the water and the Spirit? My mind raced quickly because I was going through all the Old Testament passages I could think of to think of how this could be. And then I remembered Ezekiel. Ezekiel had talked about putting a new spirit in us. But I couldn't figure this out. Flesh gives birth to flesh, but the Spirit gives birth to spirit. Jesus was wanting to baptize me, but I just didn't understand what he was talking about. See, Jesus knew me. And Jesus had this way of confounding the wisdom of the wise. And before he had a chance to really explain things, my mind is racing without even thinking. I look at Jesus and I say, how can this be? Jesus, knowing that I knew the law but didn't really know God, tried Israel's teacher, and you don't know these things? How could I answer? My heart convicted me. Jesus was someone who talked as though he knew God personally, that he had never been able to answer, and now Jesus was answering there. He went on to say, and I will never forget, that if you can't believe the earthly things that I'm teaching, how are you going to believe the heavenly things? And then he says these words, you people don't accept our testimony. You people, and he was including me with all the Pharisees that were around, those that were trying to kill him, those that would have put him to death the day he drove people out of the temple, except for the fact that the people were interested in what Jesus had to say, so they dare not touch him. But he says, you people, and he included me with all the non-believers. And then he says, you don't believe our testimony. And I had to think for myself, what does he mean by our testimony? Well, it's clear to me now. He was the Son of God, and he was speaking for God. You see, in those days, claiming to be the Son of God was blasphemy because it meant that you knew everything God knew and you had all the rights and the privileges that God would have. Now, while he was doing signs and miracles and he was a great teacher, it's really hard to wrap your mind around the fact that a man says he's the Son of God. And then he goes on and he starts to talking about the fact, for God so loved the world that he gave his one and only Son, that whoever believes in him will be saved. For he did not come into this world to condemn the world, but to save the world. That's a puzzling thought for a Jewish guy. You see, we were God's chosen people. Our inheritance was handed down from generation to generation. And now this guy is coming along and he's saying, God's going to save the whole world. That includes the Gentiles. It even included the Samaritans whom we hated. But God so loved the world that he sent his one and only Son. Oh, he had more to say about that. He had much more to say. The same authority, the same power of God was coming through this Son of God. And then he took a lamp and did what I'll never forget. He took a lamp and he held it up and he says, this is the verdict. Light has come into the world, but men love darkness instead of light because their deeds were evil. Everyone who hates evil hates the light and will not come into the light for the fear that is his deeds will be exposed. But whoever lives by the truth comes into the light that it may be seen plainly that what has been done through God. And as he puts the light down, I remembered I came to him in the darkness. It wasn't until later on that I remembered some other words that he said. Words about the Spirit that I didn't understand. One of the things he said about the Spirit was really intriguing because the wind blew through the window and it kind of shuffled some things around. And as soon as the wind blew through the window, he said these words about the Spirit. You don't know where it's coming from and you don't know where it's going. And then he said something really interesting, and now that we know about the cross, it makes sense, but at the time, it made no sense to me at all. He says, in the book of Numbers, he talks about when the Israelites were complaining against God, and God sent snakes. I hate snakes. And the snakes came, and he bit the Israelites and killed some of them. But Moses erected a pole and put a snake on it so that if you got bit, you could look at that pole and you would be saved. And he says, so is the Son of Man. He's going to be put up on a pole. And if you look to him, you'll be saved. John tells you a couple of other things about me. They're not all that important, but I'll mention them just because John did. One was the time that Jesus, the Sanhedrin, was talking about Jesus, and I kind of defended Jesus the best I could, and boy, you should have heard the commotion that caused. I thought for sure they were going to kick me out of the Sanhedrin. And the other reference that John makes to me is that when Jesus was crucified, when I saw him up on the cross, I helped retrieve his body. As a matter of fact, I bought the spices to preserve his body because I thought his body was going to decay. But you know the rest of the story. Jesus died on the cross, was put in the grave, and 3 days later, he rose from the grave. Jesus said, you destroy this temple, and in 3 days I'll raise it again. He was referring to his death and his resurrection. But I'll never forget those words. For God so loved the world that he gave his one and only Son, that whoever believes in him should not perish but have everlasting life. I guess you're wondering, did I ever become a disciple? John didn't tell you, so I'm not. But the question is, are you? The question is, have you been born of the water and the Spirit? Have you decided to put your faith in the Son of God? You see, there are so many things in this world you could put your faith in. I, as a Pharisee, put my faith in the fact that I was a part of the best church in town, the Church of the Pharisees. I had put my faith in what I knew, because I knew the Bible better than anybody. And I had put my faith in my position. I'd also put my faith in the material things of this world. And you may be there, but the question for you, do you believe that Jesus is the one and only Son, that He died to save you and give you everlasting life? Do you believe that Jesus was put on a cross to die for your sins, that was buried in the ground for 3 days, and that He was raised from the dead? Because if you believe that He is the Son of God, then you too can have everlasting life. My fate has been sealed because I'm gone from this earth. But you still have an opportunity to believe in the Son of God. The lesson is yours as we stand and sing.